my style is let's get down to it. I want, you know, sometimes it might take an hour or so to get a number out there. I will often maybe not share a number within the first two sessions, but then we need to know where we're going.
There's many ways to Z, as they say, and with that, in personal injury, it's no different. That may be by a trial verdict, that may be by arbitration or mediation, or even pre-suit settlement. We're lucky to have Ari Sliffman with us today from AJS Resolutions, who is the mastermind and probably knows best about mediation and arbitration alike. So right off the bat, let's talk and jump into this. For listeners who may not be familiar, what exactly is mediation in our world?
Sure, Steve. Well, first of all, mastermind might be a little bit of a too nice, but I'll take it. Mediation in our world is where the parties get to sit and actually talk about the issues together. Not necessarily always in the same room, but at least the way that I start it, in the same room, depending on the case, especially in your office's circumstances, the plaintiff has a story to tell. And the way that I see mediation for clients is an opportunity to tell their story outside the bounds of courtroom. And then be able to have control over their resolution. In a courtroom, we can't decide what the jury's going to decide. It's in their hands. You do the best job you can to present your client's story and their injuries and to get the best verdict for your client. But at the end of the day, they don't control that. Right. They get to do that in mediation.
So let's start simple here. When do you get most of your phone calls for mediation? Are lawyers calling you saying, I got this trial tomorrow. I need you to hear this mediation at 2 a.m. Or when have you found, double level question, of when you get most of your calls for mediation and when they're best situated for a proper resolution?
Sure. To the former question, most of the calls come just after getting expert reports in, meaning they've taken depositions, all discoveries pretty much done. Maybe there's a few more things to find, but they got back the expert reports. They say, okay, we kind of see where the value is here now. We see where we're going to want to get a resolution. It might be time to have a mediation. That's the most common time.
So for our viewers who aren't too familiar with the mediation process, and kind of pulling back the veil to how this puppet mastery works, basically the setup would be via Zoom or in person, and you would be with the plaintiff and defendant. They would agree to have you. And the analogy I always like to give for mediation, and this is no knock on you, is it's like you're having an argument and mom and dad are you, and they're going to decide what's best with their own personal unbiased opinion, and they're going to give you the pros and cons, and they're basically going to say, well, this is what I think. You can go to Susie's house and you can have a sleepover, but this is the caveat to that. And I think that's a fair analogy. So you're talking a little bit about the point where it's best situated is after the experts come in. Typically in my space, that would mean litigation, like the costs have been incurred and we get to a point where we're like, all right, let's mediate. Now, have you found that mediation with people in person versus people on Zoom, is there any more likelihood that you see better resolutions in person versus Zoom?
If I'm thinking about my success rate in the last year, I actually don't think that there is much of a difference scientifically or objectively. There's not much of a difference. Subjectively, I think there is a huge difference. I think having mediations in person when the clients are present is the best way to go about it in most circumstances. But when it comes to maybe personal injury, who's on the other side, right? From who's your actual opponent? Yeah, there's a defendant, but there might be someone else calling the shots, right? And so I personally always push for the plaintiff and the plaintiff's attorney to be in person. And then I will do at worst, they will do a hybrid where the defense and their party might be on Zoom because their client might be in Ohio or California or Georgia. You know, it might be a lot for them to come in.
So you mentioned, I'm going to a baseball game today, so I want to hit on this. You said my experiences. So in my mind, I'm going to batting average immediately. Like if you bat 300, you're a Hall of Famer. So, and I'm sure you know, so, or give me your best estimate of cases that come to you. Here's the plug here. And I candidly don't know. We didn't rehearse this beforehand. I'm on the spot here putting it. What is your percentage of cases that come to you that ultimately find a resolution, not that day, but shortly thereafter?
So if you're saying what I'll call shortly thereafter, meaning within a month or month and a half, so before trial, obviously, all but two. So in the past year. So I've been doing this full time since October. Before that, I was working for a law firm and bringing mediations in, but just two. So I am over 90%. I want to keep that. But part of that is also preparation. I know we're going to get into that later, but I have no problem postponing a mediation also to it. I don't want to waste your money. I don't want to waste your client's time and money. I don't want to waste the defendant's time and money. If I know for a fact that this thing isn't right, I've had a few in particular where I have actually prepped everything and we've talked about it. I've had the pre-mediation calls and then I'm looking at it and I'm seeing there is not common ground here yet. Delayed both of those a month and a half, and because we had some time before trial. And they had a little bit more discovery to do. And then we had them and we got them done and we got them settled. So
how quickly are you having that epiphany moment where you're like, damn, this ain't getting done?
Often I'll usually start prepping 2 weeks prior, 10 days to 2 weeks prior. I will come to that epiphany roughly 2 to 3 days before mediation.
So not even at mediation, you're at that epiphany beforehand. And just talk to me a little bit about, as we kind of get into the process, we kind of went 40,000 foot view. What's the preparation for everybody? You can start plaintiff and go defendant. Because I know from a plaintiff side and my experiences with mediation, you have to present and put your best foot forward. And you mentioned some expert reports and stuff like that. But for me, usually I'm guided by the arbitrator, which we'll get a little bit into later, but also the mediator. I'm guided by what helps you, because I feel like if I put you in the best position, then you will advocate and go into the world being the other side and do the same, and they're doing the same too. I think my struggle sometimes as a plaintiff's attorney is I spend hours and hours on these mediation packets. And for whatever reason, this is no jab at the defense side. They're not ones that have the burden of proof. So they don't really put that effort in. And what I found lately with different mediators is when they require, you need to provide at least A, B, C, D, a nice little itemized list, more gets done. Do you find that is helpful, or do you have certain requirements that you think ultimately contribute to your high success rate?
I do. I think the preparation part of it does contribute. One of the things that I require, as you said, is a memo. I need to get an overview of this case. I haven't been working on it for a year and a half, 2 years or longer, right? And so I always require the facts of the case, right? The important discovery. I always want deposition transcripts, not necessarily the whole thing, but bits and pieces that you and your opponent find very important for me to know. Also helps with credibility issues, helps with just different facts of how the incident happened, damages, et cetera. I also ask for the memos, interestingly enough, to not be confidential, part of the memos. And then, because I think it's important for the other side to know where you're coming from. They probably already do, but it's helpful when it's in writing. And then you have an idea of what they are trying to get at.
When are you requiring that packet that you're talking about now to be given to you? So if mediation is scheduled for, let's just pick a round number here, September 30th, when do you want that in your inbox or on your on your porch from FedEx with a bow delivered to you?
By the 20th.
And then you begin that process, you mentioned 2 to 3 weeks before.
Right. So you come to me and you book, all right, it's what now? In June. So you book, hey, I need something in August. We book it. By then, I give you everything that I need. You can send it to me whenever, but I'll give you a due date. And then within 2 to 3 days, I'm reading that all that information that you provided me. I also get all the confidential information, kind of do what I can with that. Then I set up pre-mediation calls, sometimes just with you or the attorney, sometimes also with the client. Depends on what cases. I do a lot of personal injury mediations. I also do corporate litigation and employment discrimination. And often in those, it's very important to talk to the parties beforehand. The best thing that, we talked about kind of how to prepare, what is the benefits for clients for this. The best thing that we can do as attorneys and as the mediator is make sure that the client trusts the process. Not to take a term from maybe our favorite or not favorite basketball team, depending on the year, but we have to trust the process. We have to buy in. And while your experience with mediation, it's very likely that this is your client's first. And for them to trust me as the mediator, as who is going to become a new neutral advocate on their behalf, they have to be able to trust me.
Are you requiring them to be on that initial phone call in the pre-mediation, or is that just the attorneys at that time?
Just the attorneys, and then we will talk about it, and maybe we'll have a second call.
Because that's interesting, because a lot of the processes that I've gone through with mediation, it's the packet goes and not crickets because you trust the person that you're enlisting, but they go through their process and we'll talk a little about your process. If you're putting in you put them in your earphones and you're going for a run or you're sitting down with a red glass of wine kind of in basically taking on that case and living it. Because I know from our standpoint, when we're ready to go to litigation, we're sitting down. We have everything. We're in the zone. We have some music or that outfit that we want to wear. So we'll tap into that a little later. But you trust that the mediator is doing that process. And then when you go to the actual mediation, if it's in person or in Zoom, they kind of give that soundbite to the client and say, hey, this is my role. This is my person. This is what I'm doing. This is what I serve. This is what I'm trying to do today. And those soundbites kind of sound consistent across the board, no matter who you're dealing with in a mediation form. But that phone call is something that's new to me and to hear about. So with that being said, talk to me a little bit about you. For 2 weeks out, you got all the packages from both sides, plaintiff and defense. How are you getting in the zone? Do you have an office? Do you have, because I'm sure the fact of just A, protecting that percentage that we talked about of settling, but also just being the advocate you are from an attorney standpoint that you previously did, you want to have closure. And I think with mediation, sometimes there isn't closure. What are you doing to amp yourself up? Not that you need it, but just to make sure that you're doing and putting your best forward. Are you going to sleep at 8 o'clock the night before? Like what's, pull back this curtain a little bit for me and kind of give me that insight.
Sure. Well, if we're taking one mediation, right? So I get those packets. I give myself roughly a 3-day period to read everything that is coming in. And it's possible that I have one, two, three mediations in that time period that I have to be preparing for, right? I focus solely on this. It is the first time that I'm seeing this case, right? You may have shared kind of what the case is about, right? But it's the first time I'm likely reading the complaint, first time I'm reading the answer, first time I'm reading the memos, first time I'm reading the expert report, first time I'm reading about the client themselves, the plaintiff, the defendant. I turn off my email, I turn off my phone. I am squarely in the zone. I have a tablet because my wife, I work from home part of the time. And my office across from City Hall in Philadelphia, I have some stuff there. But when I'm working home, especially with two young children, be able to help when needed, I I focus on this tablet, and it's black and white. I load everything into it. I'm able to highlight. I'm able to make notes. And then after that, I take one night, once I read everything, usually within one session of just, because I can, the way that I internalize it, I want to see your side. I want to see the defense sides. And then I want to take a break, right? And I might go do something else. And then I write my notes after that. And so I reread, but I take from where I highlight and make notes within your memo and within all the discovery that's been provided to me. I then go and write my official notes for and questions for each of our mediation, pre-mediation conversation.
I think the saying is happy wife, happy life.
Yes.
So I'm sure
I have a t-shirt that says that.
It's appreciated. But so now, are you doing your own evaluation on the case? Are you giving it a number per se that you would say, like, this is what I would say? Because I know some mediators, I don't know if you in particular require a demand or at least want to know what the offer is at that point.
I want to know all settlement discussions up to that point, where the numbers are in the pre-mediation. If I'm not given necessarily where they're at in the pre-mediation call, we will discuss it. I also want to know what your next offer is going to be or demand's going to be, depending on where things lie. But, you know, that it can be a range, because it's always my goal to start off on the right foot. I don't want us to be talking in media. I'm not one of these mediators who, and everyone has their style. I'm not critiquing it. It's just my style is, let's get down to it. I want, you know, sometimes it might take an hour or so to get a number out there. I will often maybe not share a number within the first two sessions, but then we need to know where we're going, because that also helps me internalize, is this actually going to settle? The answer, another question you have, I do not like to put numbers on cases. I generally have an idea of where things can settle, but I also need to know, but I may not know everything about your client. There might be something going on in your client's life that not only do they need money for the catastrophic injury that they just suffered 2 years ago, but I don't know, their kid might be going to college, right? They may have just lost a job. They need to pay their mortgage. There are all these reasons why they might need the money beyond just they got injured,
sure,
right? Which can tailor how we deal with, now that's confidential information, right? But that's how I can personally tailor mediations, be able to go certain.
So my frustration has always been with mediation from where I sit is, you kind of hit the nail on the head there. You said, I don't want to sit there and talk too much. My frustration is I'm paying, plaintiff or the client is paying for the time, so is defense. But with that being said, there's not a stringing along. I think you mentioned earlier that you know pretty soon that if it's going to work out or not. And there's different styles that we'll kind of touch base on style. But as plaintiff's attorney, what I'm doing is I know a number in my head. That number is non-negotiable by any means. It's a number I want to hit. And I go to mediation and I have that number in mind, but there's also this strategic element that takes place that maybe you can touch more on that people refer to as blocking, where if you're at 100,000, I'm just using round numbers, and you want them to get to 250,000, you're going to go up by increments or decrease on increments on your demand by 25 or 10 or 15. And when you throw in a crazy number like 333, 3333, it's almost like you're watching in real time heads explode. Because the adjuster, and maybe you can talk more of it because I never get to see behind the door. When you're talking about those numbers and blocking, the adjuster has to go through certain protocols too that maybe you can kind of enlighten us to of, is it just, hey, this is the number that they want? It's not that easy.
No, it's not that easy. And I actually, maybe it's I like the thrill of knowing the end or not knowing the end until the end. I almost very rarely ask you for what's that number.
Okay.
Because I actually don't want it. I don't want to become biased. I want to kind of, and I do that on the defense side as well. sometimes on the defense side, when we're getting close to their authority for the day, I will push for it and I will ask for it, but it's not at the beginning.
How quickly do you get that information of the authority? Because I think many people be like, well, if they know the authority, why don't they just give it to you at that point? And everybody saves time to get to go home. And at least from where I sit in the plaintiff's side, it's frustrating because you had that number 3 hours ago and you didn't give it to me. And then a lot of people say, well, what's the mediator? Or you kind of shoulder that blame. Mm-hmm. How do you deal with that? Or ultimately making it so you get to that number sooner and everybody's time isn't wasted?
So that happens a lot. So I actually volunteer at Philadelphia Court of Common Pleas. They have a required settlement conference program. Every single civil case goes through this settlement conference program. So I volunteer there. It's a great place to get business, great place to meet. How many of our attorneys I meet every session? I get 1 hour, a 1 hour mini mediation. And I will try that strategy. I will talk to both the plaintiff, I will talk to also the defendant, say, where's your authority today? And many times, and I always preface it with, this is not my usual style, but I try, it allows me to try different things. And sometimes it works. When in the ones that I've settled there, which is hard, because a lot of them talk about buy-in. That's a separate, probably for a separate podcast and a CLE on its own. If everyone's buying in, then I can get there very quickly. But the thing with private mediations where you're paying for me to come, I'm spending how many ever hours before, the parties, especially the defense, want to see it play out. They don't want to just give their authority because, sure, they have $200,000 on the case, right? I've had many times where, all right, we're at their authority, but we're going to go make a call. We're going to take an hour break. They're going to need to go up the ladder a little bit. Or let's stop. We're going to come back to this in a week or 2 weeks. We're going to readjust. That's happened many times because they may not believe that your client's actually going to get the surgery, right? You have a futures report that says your client needs surgery on their ankle. They haven't gotten it yet. Well, maybe they don't know why they haven't gotten it. Maybe your client has a good reason why they haven't gotten it. So the things one of the reasons why you don't just give it, I think, is because they believe, maybe plaintiffs believe, and then also, because it's also on your side, right? You're not just giving your lowest or what your walkaway is. So they will want to get all the information that comes along with that. You're not just giving a number, you're buying information.
So what you mentioned, the style a little bit, in a sense of how you do the mediations through the court system is different than how you do the private. Talk to me a little bit about contrasting and comparing that.
Well, I have an hour in the private one, in the court mediations. And a lot of those, for years, people have been coming and not really buying into this process. It's a great program if people use it correctly. I've gotten many mediations through there, meaning I've been given a case and I spend the hour with them and like, you know what? We want to do this. We want to do private mediation with you. You already have a knowledge base of the case. It's nice free bite of the apple for them because I don't really need as much in terms of prep. I don't make them write new memos or anything like that. But it allows me to try things out. A lot of people, though, plaintiffs, defense, they always think that no one's taking it seriously. They don't take it seriously.
It's funny you say that because that is me to a T, and I will die on that hill. And not to ruin your train of thought, but what I ultimately have started doing with mediation is I make defense pay the entire amount. And some people are going to raise eyebrows at this, and I'm sure I'm going to get some heat from both sides of the aisle. But I've realized, and my stats, not as good as your stats on that, I'd say probably 75%. When I do that, things move rapidly, quickly, and I get to the destination of where I want to go. Versus when I go in and I have that mindset where I'm paying for an hour. This is the first hour is semantics. It's posturing. It's that bickering back and forth. And then we actually get to something. But it's interesting you say that because that is me to a T. I don't believe that many times, and it's no disrespect to anybody that's doing defense work, adjusters and attorneys alike. It's just they have so many cases that to them almost mediation is free day. So that's kind of where I have the chip on my shoulder. And talk to me a little bit about, like, how would you talk me off the ledge there? Like if we're talking about this and I'm saying like I want to use you. I want to use you for mediation, but here's my concerns. A, B, C. They're going to waste my time. We're not going to get anywhere. What is the call to action on my side? Be like, Steve, splash some water in your face. Like, get a hold of yourself. And this is why I'm good at what I do. Because and outside of this, we've actually become pretty close friends because we both had newborns in our lives in the last 2 months. So it's funny where I'll be having the Gabby in my hands and I'll be texting on with one finger. Hey, we go for the podcast. Like, how are you doing? Just check-ins here and there. But it's interesting because when we talk about cases, I'm not going to say you come a different person, but you're like, you zone in. I kind of see something like twitch in your eyes and you're like, listen, I'm not doing biased. I don't want to hear the background noise and this is how it's going to go. So how would you, and you've done it before, but continue to talk me off that ledge to attorneys who are like, mediation's dumb. Mediation doesn't do anything. It's a waste of time. Many attorneys believe that you go to mediation as a plaintiff's attorney to learn what the other side's going to argue. And don't get me wrong, that's a great idea.
It has value.
It does have value. But talk to me about like those attorneys that are just not buying it. They're not sipping what you're selling. They have nothing that to do with it. They don't want anything.
I see what you're saying in terms of some defense, and now some defense will say the same thing about certain plaintiffs. And I'm sure we can all point out certain attorneys who are like that. But that's why I do the prep that I do, because I can read through it. If they're not taking it seriously, if they're not getting the authority that I know they need, we're not going to do it.
What do you do? Do you feel sometimes, going back to that analogy that I made originally with the parents, do you feel like your dad saying like, come on, what is defense saying? Like if you or myself, you think I'm not taking it seriously. What is your slap on the wrist or call to action? Be like you're wasting everyone's time.
Why are we going to mediation? Why are we here? I had a mediation a while ago that one side, they had their number. They said, this is the number, right? Like, this is what we're going to offer. This is what we're going to demand. I don't want to say whether it was plaintiff or defense, but, that was not what I was led to believe during the prep. Do significant amount of prep. This was a corporate litigation case and they had their number. And do I think if we got close to their number, would they have moved? Yes, I do believe that they would have actually moved if we got close, but they wouldn't move. And so I understand that frustration. If I had known that, I wouldn't have done it. I called it. We called it. I followed up with them later. I think they're going to trial in a couple weeks. And good luck to them. So because I think for that party, it may not have been the best solution and best posture. But I think in terms of talking yourself off the ledge and buying into the process is you have to trust the mediator to help you. You have to trust that this person, yes, while neutral, is also on your side. They're on the other side's side too, but the way that I do it is I work very hard for the parties and the attorneys to believe in me, that I am making suggestions, whether it's, all right, we're going to demand 800,000, right? Steve, I think that's a little, you got to go down more. Well, why? I was like, well, this is what, and we'll talk about it. And you'll be the one that ultimately makes that decision. You have to believe me that I'm doing the same exact thing on the other side. And I do. It's funny because, you check in with yourself sometimes, are you really neutral? Because I did 70% on the defense side, 30% on plaintiff side. So I got both sides. I know what they're going.
You find that though, that skill doing more predominantly defense makes it easier for you to kind of go into these mediations and be like, I know your process and processes. Because a lot of times mediation, I think it's definitely a craft many times on that side, you see a lot of plaintiff attorneys that go to that. It's not. I would say you are kind of a diamond in the rough as a defense going to it. And I'm sure there's other mediators out there that are defense too. But there's that extra knowledge that as plaintiff attorneys, we can assume that their defense adjusters putting in ICD codes and everything else in the big box and getting numbers shot up on the thing. And defense attorney is doing whatever they may do. But how familiar are you with those processes and how are you able to implement them into mediation to be like, I know what you guys are doing. And I'm like, I already see past you. So let's, you're playing checkers. I'm playing chess. Like, let's stop this.
Right. And I know those processes pretty well. Obviously, you know, I only had so many adjusters that I worked with, fair amount, but everyone's a little bit different. At the same time, I know the insurance carriers. I know, and we're talking specifically personal injury cases. I know the process that they're going through. And then I also know what the defense attorney is going through, that they're not only being pulled from a firm standpoint, but also from an adjuster standpoint. And many times the actual client themselves, depending on how their insurance carrier, how their insurance policy is written.
How do you weigh that? And you said an interesting point, the adjuster and the attorney, because most people, if you're not in the practice of law, you don't know that many moons ago, like when Mad Men was filmed, the attorneys were the ones who would negotiate and they would have full authority. And sometimes that still is prevalent in today's world. But more times, I'd say 9 out of 10 times, that doesn't happen anymore. And it's a single adjuster that works for the insured and company that has all the money or has the authority to give that money. How do you broach that with being respectful to the attorney? But it's almost like, you're not really serving a purpose here. You're the one who has the money. I need to keep focus with you because you're going to get this done. I don't really think they'll have the legal argument side to it. But as an adjuster, you're the one, I always love to say it, they hold the bag, they hold the purse. As my father used to say, you can say whatever you think a case is worth, and they may say fungul. We might have to blurt that out, but nonetheless, the adjuster is the one that's going to pay you. So how do you navigate those channels when it's almost like you're juggling knives? You got the plaintiffs over here who are just chilling out. They're giving a demand, and you have to balance with the attorney versus the client. And then you go on the flip side, and you have a defendant. You have the defense attorney, and you have the adjuster. Where the only person that's important there is the adjuster. How do you make them all feel loved in opening up that bag and giving you what you want?
So when you're dealing with both the attorney and the adjuster and potentially other people involved, part of that pre-mediation is I need to find out who's in charge. Because without knowing who's really calling the shots, I'm at a loss. So most of the time an adjuster will always be on Zoom, right? Unless they're local. They're not flying in. It's not 2015 anymore, right? We're post-COVID, everyone's remote. With regards to making sure that the attorney's taken care of, it's always pressing pause on Zoom, right? I'll create other breakout rooms. Now I'm giving away all my secrets, but the adjusters may not be watching. They will be usually be honest with me about, all right, here's where we think, and you know, and they'll just like, I'll ask you, tell me about your client. Tell me what's bothering them. Tell me what's going on behind the scenes that I'm not going to tell the other side, but I need to know so I can talk to them appropriately, right? Whether it's religious issues or concerns, whether it's they just had a baby and they're exhausted, right? I need to know these things because that's going to allow me to empathize with them more and more, which leads to them trusting. It's the same thing with an adjuster. They are the client who decides that has the bag and decides how much gets paid. I need to be able to channel them, be able to get you as the plaintiff's attorney, you know, the most money that your client or the amount of money that your client deserves.
Have you had a mediation since your wife gave birth?
Yes.
Give me a little bit of what skills you're seeing kind of, I'm more curious for my own knowledge of how these things overlap with mediation, because I can see how it can play out of like, okay, baby's crying, but you have two children. This being the second, and this one's over here touching the stove. And how is those skill sets, now that you're a dad again, been kind of weaved into how you're handling the mediation processes? Or is there any things that you're pulling from vice versa, or the mediation to raising your children, or raising the children to mediation?
Doing the mediation is the easy part. It's more so my skills as a mediator is beneficial towards my ability to be a father. Being a father the second time around now, I forgot how many diapers you actually change. And it used to be overnight this, oh, he's waking up. Oh my God, I have to do this and this and this. And then that would wake me up, right? Now I am, and I think this comes from having done it before, but also mediation, not reacting to the other person, freaking out, right? I have had clients or attorneys yell, right? We all get emotional at times. I kind of treat my son like that, especially in the middle of the night, where he's crying because he's hungry and I'm changing him. So I'm preventing him from getting food. He's probably cold because I'm changing him, and he's just crying. I'm just trying to stay zen. I try it so that way I can go right back to sleep. That's definitely one way. Another is, frankly, how we speak and communicate with our spouses. That has been something that has definitely improved over the last however long that I've become a mediator, because it is always difficult, but especially when you have a new child. But hearing their side here and then not reacting, especially in the middle of the night, I recommend, and I'm going to look at the camera and say this, do not react to your spouse in the middle of the night when there's a baby crying. But
whose demands have been more difficult, the newborn or the older child? Because I feel like the older child is old enough, at least, to kind of know he's got some weight that he can throw around to get what he wants, and he wants that number. If it's an extra bottle, or if it's a baseball game, or it's Legoland, or if it's time with dad or mom, he's got the leverage. So how are you dealing with that?
Yeah. So there's lots of give and take. He has leverage, and he knows he has the leverage. This is just as important in mediation and settlement discussions. You got to know who has the leverage, and you got to know when to take advantage. Right. My son is, and I always call them, I think my intro for Eitan, my newborn, on LinkedIn, I called him my newest negotiation partner. And it's so true with kids. They are your negotiation partners, because they are the most difficult people to negotiate with, because their frontal lobe is not developed at all. They don't care about why you want to say no. They just want what they want.
It seems like you have a good grasp on just this balancing act. And I know you have a few other things coming up too. You got a newborn, you got the mediation going well, and then you also have a CLE. Talk to me a little bit about what that CLE is highlighting, or what you think would benefit from that. I know I'm going to try to get on and watch that if I can.
Sure. Well, the CLE is actually going to be developed for like a lunch and learn at law firms. I took a month off when my son was born, and part of what I was thinking about during that time when I wasn't doing mediations was marketing. A lot of, I am young for a mediator. I know a lot of attorneys in the area, but at the same time, a lot of them think of me as an attorney and not necessarily think of me as a mediator. They also have their list of mediators. Everyone has their list of five mediators that they use, and they want them to overlap. I have to not only get on your list, but I have to get on defense's list. Or if there's three defendants, I have to get on all their lists too. And so it's a matter of getting on everyone's list. So networking is the most important thing. My most successful networking has been just being in person. So I started developing the CLE to get in front of defendants and get in front of plaintiff's attorneys. It's about mediating catastrophic injury and wrongful death cases, and but not beyond the value, right? We all know that, unfortunately, at the end of the day, we can't in a wrongful death case, can't get your loved one's life back. We can't, in a catastrophic injury case, we can't get your perfect elbow or your ankle back, right? So unfortunately, at the end of the day, it's money. Well, how do we get to that settlement figure? And a lot of that is where I try to specialize in, for especially for plaintiffs, is the emotional intelligence of your client. How do I work with you in those pre-mediation calls to tell the story? Whether that's having your client tell a very good story to the adjuster, right? That's the first time that the adjuster is seeing your client. Tell a good story in the opening to your adjuster about how this has affected their life. Maybe there's a daughter or a son who can tell that story on their behalf.
It's interesting you say that, because you don't see much, aside from many mediators, they'll post on LinkedIn, they'll do the blast, hey, I just left the firm, I'm doing my own thing now. You don't see that in-person kind of flair. And I don't want to call the mediators that are older old heads, but how do you see, so many words, five if you can, the difference of them and you as how you approach a case, besides the Hall of Fame statistic that we hope, knock on wood, remains intact? What makes you that you're able to do what you do, balance everything, and that it should be you and not Joe Schmo or Jane or John Doe?
Well, one thing is kind of what we talked about is already, which is I get straight to the point. While I love to sit here and chat, we're on your client's time. At some point, someone's paying for me, right? And so I don't sit there and talk about the Phillies. If we're taking a break, sure. But I'm not going to sit there and talk about the Phillies unless it's necessary for your client. I have sat and talked with a client who is just way above where their attorney thought it was valued. And I needed them to trust me. And I said, all right, we talked about the Eagles before the Super Bowl for a little bit.
Do you think your ways are unorthodox? Would people walk away from a mediation experience with you and say, that was different? I enjoyed that. I mean, what, if any, negativity, if any, have you had or in conversation with improving yourself internally, looking yourself in the mirror, and or with attorneys that have used you?
I hope that, I've gotten good feedback. And even on the couple that haven't settled, I've still gotten good feedback. And it's just a matter of getting my name out there, right? These more seasoned mediators who are former judges, right? They have the clout.
Sure.
I am a 12-year attorney and 12th-year attorney, and no one thinks that a 12th-year attorney is generally being a mediator. I think the second youngest mediator in Philadelphia might be 50, and I'm 38. So, and most of them are probably in their 60s and 70s. So the difference between me is, and I'm not speaking down to anyone, this is a career move for me. This is what I want as my career for the next 30 years, not my retirement gig.
Sure.
I talk about buying into the process. I'm buying into the process as well. I've had plenty of education on this. I've had an eye for it since law school. And even in the fall, I'll be taking Harvard's program on negotiation, their mediation course, and earning their certificate. So I'm trying to buy into the process as well.
So with all that knowledge, and finish this out here, what's the one piece of advice that you'd offer to attorney and client alike about approaching mediation? I'm going to call it the Ari way. I'm not going to call it the right way, the wrong way, but the Ari way. Because you've owned it. You've made it very clear. You've gotten on that soapbox, and I'm buying into a lot of the stuff you're saying. But what's the one piece about, like, the cherry on top to the perfect mediation process?
There has to be clear communication to me. You can't hide things from me, which is why I concentrate so much on trust and buying into the process, because you have to trust that I'm not going to breach the confidentiality that we share, right? If you don't say this, but figure out how to use this information to get me what I need. Maybe at some point I will say, hey, it's time. We got to give this piece of information. But it's communication, trust in me as the mediator and buying into my style. Those are the ways that, that's my soapbox is, it's different. It's, I'm not a hammer at the table kind of guy. So I want, when I say something, I want everyone to kind of take it not with a grain of salt, that I mean what I'm saying. And if I suggest a number or say, you know, or the next move, or, hey, I see where no one wants to go any further. Earlier, we started this conversation off at, will I put a number on it? I see, because people insinuate, right? But they don't want to be the first to give. Guys, here's the number. And then they're like, oh, yeah, that sounds good, right? Just believe that it's going to happen.
I think we're working out a slogan here, and it's like a jingle in my head where it's like, the only way to save the day is the Ari way. So I'm going to put a copyright on that. We're going to have to put a pin on for arbitration because I do want to talk about that at another time. But I thank you so much for coming in. I had a great time. My well wishes to you, your newborn, and your wife. And I know that we'll continue our dialogue one hand and all, and looking forward to connecting with you on a case for mediation.
Sounds good. Thank you very much for having me, and congratulations to you as well.
Thanks again for spending time with us on The Injury Pros. If you're navigating a personal injury case and need trusted guidance, reach out to us. We're here for you, injurypros.com, or catch us on your favorite podcast, Spotify, YouTube, and beyond. Thanks.